Hello and welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. I'm Conrad, and with me today I have...
Rick Priestley.
Rick Priestley. The Rick Priestley.
Hang on, I'll just check. Yeah, it looks like it. Looks like it. From here, from where I'm standing.
So, what we normally do, Rick, is we have a potted history of your wargaming history and who you are. I'm sure some people probably know who you are, but for the younger whippersnapper generations, they may not know.
I don't know about my secret life as an Arctic explorer and discoverer of Mayan Aztec ruins in the deep jungles of South America, that sort of thing.
Oh, those are all unconfirmed, aren't they?
Oh, okay. Well, we'll just keep with the wargaming for now. Yeah. Well, in case anyone doesn't know, I worked for Games Workshop for what seemed like forever, and I'm mostly responsible for creating the Warhammer 40,000.
How long was it?
How long? That's a very personal question. 28 years.
That's a significant amount of your lifespan then, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I joined Games Workshop in, 82, and I then went through the Warhammer phase. We developed Warhammer first. I think it was 1985 the first one came out, and then we went on and did Warhammer 40K in 1987, and then we've just been doing the same thing ever since, as far as I know.
Which you can say now, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, we did lots of other things along the way, and you know, we did some really stupid stuff. I mean, one time a day we were into, you know, Warhammer Records. We were selling clothing through the shops. We actually set up one of these live action type affairs at one stage. It never got off the ground, but
a LARPing, you mean?
Yeah, LARPing. Yeah, that's the sort of thing. You know, paint guns, strictly speaking.
Okay.
Which we had a go at. I think we got as far as taking a busload of our staff out to a wood in the middle of nowhere and getting surrounded by the police, who thought we were all criminals. It was that sort of thing. It was very well organised.
I don't remember that, so clearly that never got off the ground then.
No, happy days, Games Workshop. But, you know, we did lots of stuff, and but Warhammer and 40K were the survivors. Mm-hmm. You know, I was associated with and developing the universes, of course, and then later on with the Lord of the Rings license. I was sort of pivotal in getting that and organising it and then doing the original games design.
Okay. Mm. So you've not been... you've not been busy at all the last 28 years, really, have you?
Yeah, you think I've had enough of the old toy soldiers by now, wouldn't you?
So you've been away from Games Workshop, 5 years now?
Yeah, about 5 years, and I teamed up with my old mates at Games Workshop, particularly John Stallard and Paul Sawyer, who you might remember as Fat Bloke, who used to be White Dwarf editor.
Was this alcohol related at all?
What, the teaming up or the decision making on my part?
Both.
I think beer might have been involved, but I'm sure the decision was made cold sober. You know, I've gone in with them, so I am to some extent Warlord Games, I've been working there so many days a week, just helping out where I can and writing games and stuff. And they've published Black Powder and Hail Caesar, which I wrote. And then I helped Alessio produce Bolt Action, and I've been largely drawn into that. Bolt Action has been so successful that I found myself drawn into doing a lot of the editing and development work on that. Although it's Alessio's game and he's responsible for it.
But that means you like it and have a good interest in it.
Well, and in fact, that's what sort of brings us on to Gates of Antares in a way. I think the basic system, particularly the game, the sequencing for the turn sequence, is very clever indeed. And I've adopted a lot of those mechanics for my new science fiction game, Beyond the Gates of Antares. Yeah.
Now, that was originally on Kickstarter, wasn't it, about a year or so ago?
Yeah, we closed it in January 2013. So we finished it over a year ago. Yeah, it was originally on Kickstarter. It wasn't me that did the Kickstarter as such. It was a chap I used to work with called Rick Alexander, confusingly also called Rick. and I used to work with him at... Warhammer Online, when we were doing the Warhammer Online series, yet another thing that never quite transpired.
It's still going, pretty much, though, isn't it?
That's a revised version. The original, yes. The original game was a joint venture with Games Workshop and Climax.
Right.
And that's the one I was involved with, and that's where I met Rick Alexander. After that collapsed amid much cost, the game was taken on by Mythic, and then they became EA, and that's the version that's still out there, just about.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So that Kickstarter was organised by Rick Alexander, who thought that we could raise a substantial amount of money to get the science fiction game I'd sort of been musing about for a good while kickstarted. But I didn't know anything about Kickstarters at all. So it was all very exciting and a little bit frightening. And I have to say, in retrospect, I don't think Kickstarters are ideal for the sort of games that we're talking about here, tabletop war games with miniatures. I don't think it's a very good way of bringing them about.
Why do you think that is?
Because they have to develop organically.
Yeah,
and
okay.
For a Kickstarter, what I didn't realise really when I started was that you have to have everything up front.
Well, you have to. I think you have. There is a certain. It's not even a requirement. It's an expectation from people who are backing the Kickstarter that they're going to see some of the goodies that they're going to get. And but I don't particularly agree with that because, you know, we're all tight war gamers. You know, we got moths in our wallets and we're looking for free stuff all the time and bargains. So. That's the other thing. People are looking for extras and goodies in the Kickstarter as well. But
sure.
I think Kickstarter should be used for essentially projects exactly like Gates of Antares. And, you know, we've said this on the podcast before. It actually meets the proper requirements as opposed to the idea of what Kickstarter seems to be, a pre-sale, shop window type thing.
Well, it's fair enough. I mean, I wouldn't... I'm not knocking it. I think we went in thinking Kickstarter was one thing, and the reality was that it was, even as we were doing our Kickstarter was changing. It was crystallizing, and it was becoming apparent that what it really was a route to market.
Yeah.
It's another route to market, which means you have to have something to market. And as a route to market, it's got all sorts of problems, as far as I'm concerned, because... if I create a war game, I want people to play it.
Yeah.
That means I want traders to stock it. So I want shops to stock it, and I want them to support it.
Yeah.
But if the only way you can buy, or the major way you're buying this game is via a Kickstarter, none of the traders are going to be interested. Why should they be?
Well, I mean, the initial sale or into market comes from the Kickstarter production, and then what happens support-wise afterwards? Will LGS's... stock it? I wouldn't think they'd be stocking a lot of it unless the game is absolutely superb and is the nirvana of all gaming systems.
The pattern seems to be they fire and forget. You know, the Kickstarter happens, everyone gets excited, they wait for their stuff to come, the stuff comes, they froth about it, put it under the bed and do another Kickstarter. You know, that seems to be the pattern.
It gets put where big pens go.
Yeah,
to the other storage boxes with all the other stuff.
Yeah, and the other problem with Kickstarter from a commercial point of view is that you're selling everything at trade discount. Effectively, you're selling it cheap, so you're not making the margins that you'd normally make by selling direct to a customer. So although there's some big numbers involved with Kickstarters, often there's very little profit, if any.
Yeah,
and I know some people have become quite unstuck doing Kickstarters because they haven't got the sums right, and they've ended up turning over a lot of money, but not making a lot of profit.
Well, I've backed a few Kickstarter products, including Relic Knights, and it's still not here. And that is the joke within the wargaming community that we're still waiting for it. And I think that's the other problem. You've either got to understand that you'll get your stuff when you get your stuff, but the initial sort of excitement and interest, there is a risk of it sort of just disappearing because your product's not there, you know?
Yeah. Well, in any case, what we're doing with Gates of Antares is we're actually going to go for a conventional route, develop it really slowly, so not a Kickstarter-type process at all.
Yeah.
Um, bit by bit, make it iterative, involving play testers and I would say community involvement. But I have contacts throughout UK clubs mostly, who are helping me play test it, and of course we're playing it. And what happens is you then get an organic development.
Yep.
And you can work with the, rather than coming up with all the ideas at the beginning and the concepts and then giving them to someone and saying that's it, you kind of work with the sculptors and you work with the all the players, so that you take the best ideas from everyone. And the sculptors are really important in this, because I've always said that that the best model is always going to be something that the sculptor has a very, very strong vision for. If you, you know what I mean? If you're a games designer and you have a very strong vision of something and you try to tell what that, you try to explain that to a figure designer, but you can't draw and you can't design figures, that guy's trying to make something that's in your head.
Absolutely.
He doesn't stand a chance.
The artwork assets are really important in one respect, and then the actual sculptors themselves, because the artwork gives a visual feel, but the sculptors give the 3D in your hand feel, and potentially is not necessarily the same as what the art asset shows. The sculptor may have his own twist, and something may change in the design process, and it comes out slightly differently or better or worse sort of thing, and that generally sort of stamps
it does.
A game in you know, it gives its identity, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, well, I tend to think that the job of me as someone who's ringmastering the whole thing is not to come up with every single brilliant idea, but to contribute where I can and then look for the best when it comes to other things, and I'm quite pragmatic by nature, but that means that things evolve. So what starts out as kind of like a vague idea will shape up as it goes along, and sometimes take a twist.
Which is a good thing, because I think, you know, from a games development point of view, certainly for something that you do, I think that's how you like to work, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it is. And the only way to really write games is to play games.
Yes.
You know, I've seen any number of rule sets, and I've looked through and thought, you know, this really hangs together well, but it's not been played. You can just tell it's overly complicated, or has got contrary mechanisms throughout.
So, or it's just plain rubbish.
It could be just plain rubbish, yeah.
I mean, with your connections and networks over the years, you're going to use the community to playtest the game or develop it, and I'm guessing you're going to take input from the community as well.
Yeah, up to a point. The problem with being open to the community, and this is something which I think became very apparent in the Kickstarter, which was done as a very open sort of system. We were inviting comment all the time. You don't get comment, what you get are arguments.
Yes. People have very strong opinions, don't they?
Yeah, and they have different opinions to each other.
Yes.
So it suddenly becomes a kind of battleground.
Yes.
And the more open-minded you appear to be, the bigger that battleground becomes. So
did you know black is the new white?
Yes, exactly. It is.
Yeah, so you have to be. You're the final decision maker at that point. And I've seen two ways of doing playtesting. Mm. Privateer Press did a database driven, sort of form filled, quite sort of rigid Kickstarter. So you fed your information into essentially a database screen, and then they went away and reviewed it. And then, for instance, Weird, who've recently released Malifaux version 2, you know, all their playtesting was done forum-based, so it was all open and very, very... You could say whatever you want sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, we've done both of those against Workshop as well over the years. The first one of those is very much the way that computer games tend to be.
Yes.
Tested and debugged, and that, which is fine. But I prefer to work with a small team and have a personal relationship, because I don't think the data works with war games, because people play in different ways and have different expectations and styles.
Could you work with both, do you think? or would you just prefer the smaller group?
Smaller group, individual contact.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know someone personally, their feedback's almost useless.
Yes, I know what you're saying, yeah. And I think people can drive a game or how they perceive a game that they want it to be developed in a particular way, or a race or rules to be developed in a particular way.
Yep. That's why you have to
benefit
learn
them, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's why you need to know people personally, because if they've got a particular fixation, you'll know that what you'll get back will reflect that fixation.
Yeah.
Or interest, or obsession, or whatever. No one is neutral, including me. You know, everyone has got some kind of angle on how they see the thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Working.
Yeah. Right, so we've come to time, Rick, and we haven't really talked much about Gates of Antares.
Yeah,
so
I think
what we should do is... No, don't worry about it.
I think
what we should do is have you back on another episode. So, I've been Conrad.
And I've been Rick.
Goodbye.
Cheerio.
You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at Fools_Daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.